You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Are you a diehard comic book collector?
Or maybe a lapsed fan?
Maybe even someone who has never picked up a comic book in their life. Hi, I'm Remso Martinez.
And I'm Mark Clare. Every single Wednesday at the Second Print Comics Podcast, Remso and I take a deep dive into the storylines, character arcs, moments, and events that made us the fans we are today.
Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever else podcasts are available.
Check out more from the Second Print Comics Podcast at secondprintcomics.com.
Yourself. You're on the run with Remso W. Martinez.
Hello, Dad.
Hey, Remso, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Well, I want to thank you for being here and for paying for the internet to make this all happen. So, you know, thanks. This has been something that people have been commenting on over the last 6 months. I don't often talk about it because I don't like the idea of boasting about the accumulation of stuff, but it's something I love. So every once in a while, I will bring up, oh, I got a new watch. Here's what I like about it. People come out with, why do you need a watch when you have a phone? Who would spend money on watches? Have you heard of Movement? And does anyone still wear watches? And why would you spend all that money on watches? So I've got to start with this because you're the person that got me into the hobby. And as some people in some of the watch forums that you and I are both part of have said, get your son addicted to watches so that way they'll never have enough money for drugs. What started this habit with you?
Believe it or not, when I was a kid, I didn't really have a lot of watches. I only had whatever watch my dad would buy me or whatever digital watch like back in the 80s that I would buy myself just because I had the money from, you know, a birthday gift or something like that. And honestly, I didn't really start buying watches until I met your mom. So when I met your mom, I think I only had like one watch, maybe two. It was definitely a digital watch because, you know, I just come into the army, so that's all you wear. And I think I had like a dress watch that I bought somewhere. I don't remember what it was. But when we were dating, one of the first gifts she gave me was a Guess chronograph watch on a leather band. So it was the first watch I'd ever received that was actually really nice, and that was on a leather band. I mean, I loved that watch. It was really, really nice, but it was tiny. I mean, I still have it. I don't wear it, but I've kept it all these years, and it's probably smaller than 40 millimeter, probably 35 or 36.
That's the crazy thing, because when I look at the watches that were around back when you were around my age, and even going farther back, like in the 60s when watches were more of like a middle-class accessible thing, those were small. And it seems like now, you know, when I was starting to collect in the mid-2000s, you've got watches the size of dinner plates. It's amazing how, you know, over time, things have just gotten so drastically bigger.
Well, I think it's technology. I think it's mass production because, you know, before – I don't think there were as many people that could copy watches as they are now, especially now with China mass producing every watch you ever want. And the reason, I mean, you and I have talked about this, the reason why watches have gotten bigger, I think there's an aesthetic to it. I mean, you and I have some bigger watches, which, you know, for certain things that you wear, they look cool and they're appropriate. But like Invicta, you know, a watch brand that I love and hate, I mean, they make some incredibly nice, amazing watches. But at 50 millimeter and above, they make no sense.
That's the confusing thing.
And not everybody can wear it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the confusing thing about Invicta. Some of my favorite watches, and we'll get into the main way we're going to do the show in a second. Some of my favorite watches are Invicta, which for like big watch snobs listening to this, you're probably scoffing. But that's just the truth. Also, some of the most disgusting watches I've ever seen are Invicta.
Yep.
So it's like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. But to kind of carry the show, what you and I did was I wanted to really show people why the hobby matters to me and why for me it's not just collecting bling, but it's it's something more than that. There's something about the aesthetic. There's something about the meaning behind watches, and also an understanding of time. So what you and I did for listeners is we went ahead and grabbed five watches from our collection that mean the most to us. And these range from, you know, really, really expensive, pricey stuff, which, you know, sometimes just stays in my box because I'm afraid of scratching it, to the stuff that you'll think, really, that's what he really likes when he owns this stuff. So to kind of start it off, because I don't know what's in your selection, but I did see one as we were getting set up. You and I both chose Invictus. So I'll let you start with this one.
Okay, so you want me to go through the first watch, or you want me to talk about all five, or at least say the five that I have?
Yeah, so you go first, and then I'll go next. But I want to start with the Invictus, since we kind of threw that into the fire.
So yeah, out of the five, I have one Invicta. And it's the Invicta that, I mean, I really, really love this watch. I mean, it's the Invicta Pro Diver, the black bezel, coin bezel. So it's basically an homage to the Rolex Submariner.
Can you hold it up to the camera so I can see which one? Oh, you like that watch so much. You bought the same one in blue recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And not only that, I also have the one that's like gold and black with the gold and silver band. So, I mean, that's more of a dressy one. But
what is it about you and divers? Because, you know, you started with the Invictas, but like a majority of your collection, a lot of it is divers.
I don't know. I just like divers. I like the look, and I like how you can use them both. Some of them you can actually dress, you know, use them like to a formal function, but a lot of them you can use them in everyday wear. And not only that, you know, being in the Army, it's just like the perfect rugged type watch to have. But this one, the Invicta Pro Diver, let's see, which model is this? This is the 8926OB original bezel.
So that's the basic baseline Pro Diver automatic that they
exactly
sell.
Exactly. And you know what? I've had a chance to. I mean, I've known people that have a real Rolex Submariner, the same one that this is an homage for, and I've put them side to side. And honestly, I don't see much of a difference. The biggest difference is money. This one right here, I paid maybe $80 for, and the other one was I think the guy paid something like $7,000 or $8,000. So, but this watch keeps great time, looks extremely well. I can wear it to any function, from casual to dressy, and not only that, it's just a solid good watch. So this is really my favorite Invicta.
Yeah. So for me, you know, this was actually the first watch I think that started the habit. So this was the gateway drug. It's the Invicta. I think they call it the Paul Newman Invicta because it looks like a Paul Newman Daytona with the white dial and the silver gilding. And I mean, sorry, the gold gilding and the silver case. I remember you had this watch. So this was your watch. And then you gave it to me, and I thought, oh my gosh, it is so cool. My dad gave me his really expensive watch, only for me to realize that you bought this and you gave it to me because you wanted to buy another Invicta to make room.
Exactly.
but what's really interesting is I didn't know that there was anything unique about watches until I remember I was in like eighth grade. We were at Panera's together. We were doing work. I was doing homework. You were doing stuff for one of the master's courses you were going through. And I remember I wanted to see the Invicta that you got after you gave me this one. I think it was that Pro Diver. And I remember saying, Dad, I think it's broken because I can hear a sound. And that was the first time I learned about automatic movements in watches. And mm-hmm. for me, as just a kid, all I had ever really known were digital watches, were quartz watches. But I feel like when you actually begin to understand the movements about a watch, that's when you really get hooked. Because after that, that's when I actually started learning more about it and everything else. You know, for people that are getting into the hobby, what was one of your things that really grabbed you? Was it just the way the watches looked, the functions of the watches, the movements? Because for me, that was kind of the memory that I had.
Honestly, it's a little bit of everything, but I know that initially, I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. I've always liked Rolex. So I think I was always trying to find that watch that was comparable or close to it that kind of had that same type of elegant look. I've always liked that. But I also, I mean, we're talking about five, but as you know, I have a bunch of others. I also just like watches. I mean, I like, you know, it's like, it's an accessory, but, and you can, you know, you can use it in different types of settings, whether it's active, whether it's dressy, whether it's work, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I just always liked watches. And to me, especially getting to know more about the complications of the watches, the movements on the watches. I mean, little things like sapphire crystal versus hard X and then, you know, it's not just Casio and Timex and Invicta. I mean, you have a whole world. I mean, there's Vostok, there is the micro brand world. So, you know, it's like I always could not get enough of trying to find the one watch that would just make me feel that, you know, like if I wore it, it would make me feel good. You know, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, you want to find a watch that fits you and that makes you feel good in whatever you're about to do, whether it's something professional, something active or whatever. And as you and I have, you know, we have watches for pretty much everything.
So everything and backups.
Exactly.
Well, one thing that you mentioned is, you know, sometimes you want to wear a watch because it brings about a certain aesthetic, a certain feeling. My second choice is what you got me when I graduated from undergrad at Liberty. It's the Tag Heuer Speedway. That's the common term for it, but it's the Tag Heuer Formula One chronograph. This watch, you know, I always, when I look at my watches, I can always remember where I was when I got it, how I felt when I got it, and what mood I want when I want to put it on. I tell people this often when I discuss my career journey and everything. Like, I was unemployed for a little while. And the thing is that when you're going from interview to interview to interview, you want to build up that confidence because you're nervous. And I think for almost every interview I went to, whether it was for something part-time or for something, you know, in DC that could have been possibly full-time, I always wore this Tag Heuer. In fact, this was the Tag Heuer I wore when I did my interview at the Washington Times, which really kind of jump-started, you know, pushed me into professionalism, adulthood, all that stuff. But what I will say is that, you know, when my confidence wasn't at its highest, I didn't wear this watch because I associated, you know, premium luxury watches with being successful. And I would look at it and I would want to put it on some days. And, you know, I would feel like, have I earned this watch? Do I feel like this is something that, you know, I should be wearing? It's what winners wear. So now I look at it, and as I'm older now, I think, you know, this is a watch that was given to me because I succeeded at something that was really difficult. College was difficult for me. So over time, I think I've really began to love this watch even more, not just because it's a Tag Heuer, which was my first real, you know, real watch, but because of what it symbolizes. It symbolizes that journey. So, you know, I've always appreciated it. I know sometimes you ask, why don't you wear the Tag Heuer often? But it's often because I'm waiting for that moment where, you know, when I put it on, I really feel that panache that comes with a luxury watch.
No, and I agree with that because, I mean, you know, when I go look at all my watches, I mean, some of my nicest watches are the ones that I least wear, which is sad because I do want to watch, you know, use them. But I don't know. Sometimes it's like, no, it's not the right moment. Okay. Or legitimately, you know what? No. I have to give the lower level watches a chance because they're not going to get out as much because I also don't want the better watches to, you know, to maybe get dirty or get scratched or whatever. But I give everybody a try. Everybody comes out of the watch case every, you know,
call it the Russian orphanage.
Yeah,
because of the number you have and the fact that you know, I think, you know, you have a real watch addiction when you start messing with the straps and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I don't like seeing, you know, what I call naked watches without straps. But anyway, what's your number two?
So my number two is a Vostok Amphibia Scuba Dude with the blue face. Now, this is a watch that I've known about for many, many, many years. I mean, just the fact that Russians make watches, you know, a lot of people don't know that. And this is probably one of the most economic and actually, I can't even say underrated. Whenever I've heard anybody talk about Vasta, they give it all the credit. It is a hearty, it is a accurate, and definitely, you know, for whether you go scuba diving or get it wet, or if you have a, you know, an active type job, it's the perfect watch. And not only that, guess what? You change the strap and it's a dress watch. It is the most unique watch that I have. And I love it. I mean, and it's funny because remember you and I shared a video of the actual Vostok factory of how they make this.
It is industrial. Like it's like they're making AK-47s or something.
Exactly. And it's amazing that these beautiful watches come out of that factory. What I think is kind of sad now, again, love hate relationship with this one. Vostok is probably the one watch that you can mod the most. It's very mod friendly. So because of that, people have definitely taken advantage and changed all kinds of things, straps, hands, second hands, and the bezel. The bezel seems to be the biggest thing that people change. Honestly, I love the Vostok the way it is. I wouldn't change anything about it except the watch band that it came with. It came with the cheap, you know, industrialized watch band that I threw away. But I have a NATO strap on it now, and it's an amazing watch. I love it. And actually, when I've gone out, especially on vacation, think this is the watch. This is like my go-to watch. I always bring this one when I go somewhere.
You know, it's crazy though. Like I've worn like my Omega or my fancy looking Invictus or my Tag, and I've never gotten compliments on those watches. My Vostok gets me more compliments from strangers than any other watch I own.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I mean, it looks like it's, you know, a watch out of time because it has that Cold War aesthetic and it's just so different. Like the domed acrylic crystal makes it look like it could be worn on Mad Men or something.
Yeah.
And what's crazy about it, you mentioned modding. I feel like the people that mod their watches, change the straps, the bezels, the hands and stuff like that. What I've noticed about them in some of the watch forums on Facebook is that they don't just mod one watch. They end up ultimately modding all of their watches. Now, you and I change straps, but we've never done, you know, some of the crazy changes that other people have. I feel, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, I feel like if I'm going to buy a watch, the last thing I want to do is change everything about it. I just, something about it, like it feels wrong.
Yeah. I'm not against people that modify watches. As a matter of fact, you and I have seen some of the pictures of some really amazing watches, especially with Seiko, the Seiko brand.
They can make a Seiko SKX look like, a Rolex Explorer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, more power to you because the fact is some of those mods, the parts to mod a watch can cost as much, if not more than the watch itself. So that's the part that I have an issue with. You know, I don't necessarily want to put more money into a watch that's not worth it. You know, I don't want to buy $200 worth of parts for a $80 watch, even though don't get me wrong, some of them come out looking beautiful and amazing, but like for example, Invicta, Vostok, I wouldn't do anything because that's who they are. You know, once you start doing that, then you lose what they are. And I like keeping them pure. So I'm a purist when it comes to that.
Yeah, I get it. Like the only time that I think I've ever seen you change part of a watch was when there was this, it's like a small chronograph. I forget what it's called. It's like a Vector or something. You still have it. I've seen the watch, but years ago, I think you dropped it and you nicked the glass. You took it to the watch repair shop.
It was a Pulsar. It's a Pulsar.
That's it. Yeah. He changed the glass and it was that mineral crystal top hat look. So the glass actually came above the bezel. It actually looked good with that. And it didn't change too much, but it's not like he changed anything else about it. It was still basically the same watch.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, I had to change the glass, the crystal, because I cracked it. And unfortunately, the nice jeweler who did the work didn't do a really good job the first time, so he had to do it again, and the watch just is not the same. Not only that, it's not waterproof anymore. But no, I don't mod. I don't mod. I mean, there is that one Seiko, the Seiko that you and I have, the same one, that I did reach out to that one It's a company called Loomshot, which you can, you know, find on Facebook. And they are experts at modding all kinds of watches. I mean, they have a great Facebook page, and what they do is amazing. And I did, out of curiosity, the other day, email the guy and ask him, hey, you know, how much would it cost to change the bezel of the Seiko? Because the Seiko that you and I have, I don't know what the model is.
Which Seiko is it?
It's a GMT one, the big GMT.
Oh, that one.
With the bezel that has like coordinates of a compass.
That thing is a tank.
Yeah, it's a great watch.
That watch can deflect bullets, I swear.
It's a great watch, but if I were to mod one watch, it would be that one just to get another bezel. But I did email the guy, and he never emailed me back with anything, so I don't know. I'm probably not going
to
do anything.
Well, he's not sponsoring this episode, so we can tell people not to go to him.
Exactly.
It's interesting you bring that up. I remember, like, the first watch you got me that I remember thinking, oh, this is probably the coolest watch I have. It was around the time you gave me the Invicta, but you remember the Casio Duro?
Which one was that?
The Casio Duro is a $50 Casio dive style watch. It's called the Bill Gates watch because Bill Gates owns that watch. It had the little Marlin on there, and it was quartz, had a rubber strap. I wore that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, got it.
I loved that watch. What bothered the hell out of me was I loved it, absolutely loved it. I was in a class in my freshman year of high school, and there was this dick there who was just he was just on my case all the time. He knew I liked that watch because he was also a watch guy, so I thought we could be friends, but no, because he's a jerk. I'm reaching into a drawer to grab, like, you know, an extra pencil or something in the supply cabinet, and what he does is he rushes over and He slams the drawer on my wrist. Luckily, the watch caught it. What sucked was that the watch caught it. So it was a deep scratch from one end of the glass to the other, and it just messed up the watch after that. And I always tell myself, you know, one day I'm going to get a replacement Casio Duro, but everything else I got eventually kind of, you know, pushed that away. But it's like, it's those moments where it's like, yeah, you just because I could have replaced the glass, I could, you know, it probably would have been better just to get a replacement watch. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you change it, it still won't be the same.
And you know what? You just mentioned something that's true right now, which is, like, for example, when I was younger, an automatic watch tended to be Swiss made and tended to be very expensive. Right now, because the technology is more available, especially China. You know, I keep on saying China, but it's true because China has mastered the ability to copy all these things and other, you know, companies too. You know, people with money had automatic watches. Everybody else had to buy battery powered watches, which is not a big deal. Quartz.
Well, what's funny is that quartz watches are actually more reliable than automatics.
But you know, the automatics, which I love automatics, even though I do have some quartz. You know, they've always had that prestige. You know, they're a cut above, and where was I going with this? What was the thing about the automatic?
The people who can afford the expensive Swiss watches.
Okay. So I guess my point is that, you know, it's just right. Oh, okay. Sorry. It was really about replacing things on a watch. Right now, watches are cheap. If you really think about it, if they're like this, you know, Invicta Pro Diver, it's actually a very inexpensive watch.
It's like $75.
Yeah, right now it's like $75. And literally, if anything were to happen to it, like if the crystal broke, it would cost me between $40 and $50 to replace it. So then by then, it's like, why even replace it when I can just get a brand new one or get something else?
Okay, so the Vostok Amphibia, that's actually one of your more recent watches from the last couple of years. When you got that, I bought myself one, and I wore it to death. It eventually broke, so that way when you move it, something with the rotor on the inside of the automatic function, it would actually make the second hand stop, so the time stopped being accurate. I took it to the jeweler to get it fixed, and he's like, to service an automatic watch of any kind starts at like $700.
Yeah, exactly.
You might as well just replace your $80 Russian watch.
Exactly, and that's the thing with watches right now. I mean, across the board, I mean – there's so many options out there, so many different movements. available, especially a lot of options in the automatic world now. And they're all affordable. And like I said before, if you mod a watch, you're probably going to be putting more stuff into a watch that's probably not worth it. And not only that, if you have a good watch, but you want to start tweaking or replacing some things that break, sometimes it's just better just to get a new watch.
Yeah. Speaking of which, speaking of cheap quartz watches, my number three is actually the first watch I bought myself. And this is the one I put it on the other day after taking a shower. I fell asleep with it just because it is so comfortable. It's my Timex Expedition. It's a basic field watch. I remember I bought this for $30. I had to ask mom permission to use her credit card and everything. This was like my sophomore year of high school. I bought this watch and I wanted it because I had just watched The Great Escape with Steve McQueen. It's amazing because I can always, when I look at watches, I usually tie them to the characters in film and stuff like that. There's a great relationship between style and, you know, the certain brands. Like, everyone will always be able to attach Steve McQueen with the Tag Heuer Monaco, or James Bond with the Omega Seamaster. But in The Great Escape, he wears a Rolex Explorer. Didn't have the bezel, had a green strap. So I saw this Timex, and it looked the most like it. And I still look at this, and I still remember what it was like as a kid watching that movie. And, you know, it's going on a decade now, and I look at this watch, and I'm never getting rid of it. Like, the Indiglow isn't where it used to be. The leather strap is kind of gnarly because I've worn it out in the heat and stuff. I used to wear this watch for Civil Air Patrol towards the beginning when we were doing, like, FTXs and stuff with the other cadets. But, yeah, I mean, this is probably one of the cheapest watches I own. I mean, I own a plastic silicone Swatch. You know, it's the small black one. That's a $110 watch. But I look at this and it's like, you know, if the house was on fire and I had to grab one, this is one of the ones I would grab.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So what's your number three?
So my number three now, so the first two watches were known brands. As you know, I've also delved into micro brands. So my number three watch that I love, And again, it goes back to a really nice watch that I just don't wear that much. It's the Helgray Hornet. Remember this one?
What's crazy about that, and unless people already know this watch or they're Googling it, everyone always thinks the crown is supposed to be like directly on the side of like the 3 o'clock marker. What's crazy about that watch are the multiple crowns. I mean, doesn't one just control the interior bezel?
Yeah. So,
is that
first
a helium release?
No. So it's, for those of you that have never seen it and you Google it, it has two dials on the right-hand side of the watch. The bottom one is the one that controls the time. There is no date function in the watch, but there is a GMT function. So the red bezel on top, that's how you move it to basically do a second time zone, a dual time zone. But what's really cool about this watch is that it's not an automatic. It's actually battery powered quartz, but it's smart quartz, and it has a little dial inside of the face that actually is always doing really, really smart ticking. And not only that, the hands in this watch are just really, really cool and amazing. And not only that, what's even better, this watch has the best lume I have in any watch. It's a blue lume. And it legitimately stays on for a long time compared to my other watches. But I saw this on a startup, on a Kickstarter campaign on Facebook, and I've been looking at this watch.
That was a Kickstarter watch?
This was a Kickstarter watch. So I kept an eye on it for about a year and a half. And then finally I just pulled the trigger and, got your mom to give it to me as a Christmas present. And it's great. It's great. For a lot of people out there, again, I'm in the Army, and in the Army, you have two types of watches. You have like your digital cool watches, and those go everything from the basic Casio to like the big Suntos, you know, with GPSs and compasses and all that. And then the next level are the cool tactical like watches. And this is kind of like it. And this one, not only is it a watch that I could wear in my uniform, but it's definitely a watch I could wear with khakis and a polo. And I could even wear this in a suit if I really wanted to. So this is like one of these, you know, all around watches. And it's rugged. sapphire crystal. So the first time I ever got sapphire crystal. And what's really cool about this watch is that they don't make it anymore. So Hellgray still exists, and they've moved on from the Hornet to the Hellgray Bomber, which is actually an automatic version, but it doesn't look the same. So I'm actually kind of sad that they got rid of this one, but I have one, and that's all that matters. I mean, I really, really love this watch.
Okay. You bring up something important, which is the function of your watches. I had a friend from college recently reach out to me because it was on Instagram. I like to post pictures of watches on Instagram for those of you that haven't called me a watch whore yet. And he asked me, Remso, what is the perfect mil-spec watch? And mil-spec means military spec. And I kind of laugh because realistically, when you see watch companies, and I hate Luminox, I hate Luminox with a passion because they're the Navy SEAL watches. But I want to get your opinion on this. I really just think that mil-spec, military spec watches is just marketing. Because for anyone that's been in the military like us, if it's mil-spec, it's usually crappy and it's usually kind of cheap.
Yeah, I mean, a basic G-Shock is mil-spec. I mean, a basic Casio is mil spec, and not only that, the SEAL watches, I mean, definitely. And I know people that work in special operations. Those guys, I mean, the watches that they have are huge because there's a lot of functionality that they need. They need an accurate altimeter, barometer. The compass is the big thing, and then also little things like GPS for some of them, and even heart rate monitor. Because again, these operators are performance athletes, but that's higher end. You talk about a regular infantryman, a regular soldier, sailor, Marine, Coastie. All they need is a durable watch that can tell time, has good illumination, so they can look at it at night to operate. So yeah, these NTM and all these other high end companies that come up, we're the special ops watch brand or whatever. Honestly, I've been around a lot of those guys and I've never seen those watches.
Like I could say that, G-Shock, Casio overall, but really the G-Shock line and the Timex Ironman watches are the ones that you're more likely to see anywhere. But you told me something which, just completely blew my mind the other day. I bought myself, so my recent purchase was the Orient Nami. Because I realized of my entire collection, I didn't have just a basic black bezel, black face diver. So I'm like, I have to have it to round about my whole collection. You saw somebody when you were overseas who was special operations with that watch. And when I think about it, it's like, okay, now just knowing that somebody at that level wore it, it makes it just a tad bit cooler.
Yeah. Like I said, it's, I don't know how to describe it, but there are days that you want to wear, your tactical rubber Casio, type watch. But there are days that you see these guys and gals, because we have women that also operate in that world, that you'll watch them walk around with a Rolex, like a Submariner, or you'll watch them walk around with something like really nice. NATO straps are big. So like that guy that I was telling you about, he had that same Orient, but with a really cool NATO strap, and it looked cool, So you see a lot of that too.
It's crazy. In the recent Call of Duty game, you could actually, and I bring this up just because I think the watch culture is finally starting to be seen more publicly in the new Call of Duty. When you go ahead and customize your guy, you can customize his watch.
Oh, wow.
Customize that. So it's just one of those things where it's like, people have been noticing. And when it gets out into popular culture, it makes this hobby that people think is just a hobby for people with lots of money. And it makes folks realize, oh, no, this is more accessible. What I always thought was funny was, I think this is when you were in Afghanistan, not necessarily Iraq, but the contractors on base. The watches that they wore were always some of the ones where when you would tell me they'd wear that, I'm like, why would they wear that? And it was always like the giant, gaudy, blingy Invictas.
Yes, I was actually shocked when I was in Afghanistan in 2012 how many Invictas I saw that people were wearing out there. And like you said, they were mainly civilian contractors, not necessarily military. And they're huge. But, getting you know, kind of getting back to the earlier part of the conversation about why our watch is so big, you know, unfortunately, you know, Invicta is looking for a price margin to make money. So it's cheaper to make big watches because the parts are bigger, which means you can mass produce them and you can sell them cheaper. It's the smaller pieces that are a heck of a lot more expensive. But yeah, these guys would wear it, and I just didn't know why. I mean, there was no value. I guess they just, again, in a combat environment, especially in a deployed forward environment, like I said, you traditionally see the big watches, you know, the Suntos, the big G-Shocks and things like that. Because again, there's a lot of functionalities that soldiers, airmen, Marine, Coasties, and others need in those environments. So I don't know if these people got the big Invicta just because they just wanted to kind of fit into the room. But yeah, that was kind of funny. I never understood why they had those.
Well, I mean, it's like putting a turret on a Prius. Yeah, now it's a tactical vehicle, but it's still a Prius. I mean, for me, when I always look at it, in my mind, it was always, if you're going to wear a watch that's that big, that is not digital, and it does not have anti-reflective coating, in an environment like that, you know, reflection matters. Things like that. You don't want your watch to really be the thing that sticks out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So speaking of all this, to kind of stick on trend, my fourth watch is actually my Casio Pathfinder, which some of you might remember in an episode way, 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 way long ago. I lost this for a year and a half and it was under my bed. So when I found it, I also found
it. I found it.
No, I found it. You were not here.
I think I found here. It.
No, you know why I know? Because I also found a $20 bill and I was more excited to find my Pathfinder than the $20 bill, which I immediately spent on something. But no, this
okay,
was,
if that's what you want to tell people, but you know, I found it.
But you bought the watch. You bought this for me around Christmas 2013 because I was going to MMI. Now I'll let you explain this one. I'll explain why I love this watch so much with all the nicks and scratches and marks and everything. But like to kind of go on trends, you bought me this watch because as I was getting ready to go to basic camp, LTC, whatever they renamed it a million times. But you know, this watch has everything that you wanted. It's from Casio. It's built like a G-Shock. It's got all the functions, barometer, altimeter, compass. I call this my badass watch because all of the craziest, most dangerous things I've done in my life, which is not much, you know, but for me, it was scary getting to fire rifles for the first time, rappelling, doing squat exercises, getting muddy, just all the crazy stuff. This watch survived all of it. And it's, you know, it's a solar watch too, which is crazy. That's lived this long. It still works so well. But I mean, I look at this watch and I remember every scratch has a story. Like this is my most chewed up watch ever. And I remember a few years ago, I had gotten just an actual G-Shock. It was a tan G-Shock that fit in more for my multicam uniform compared to my digital. And I took it to an annual training. And this is the one like dirty secret about some G-Shocks, especially the ones that have the actual minute and hour hands on there instead of just the pure digital ones. But there's a computer chip issue that happens every so often. So I'm trying to reset that watch. It breaks. I never wore it again because of that. Luckily, in my duffel bag, I had my Casio Pathfinder. So this immediately just substituted in. I looked at it. I remember kind of petting it like, you know, Gollum from The Lord of the Rings. I'm like, I'm sorry I cheated on you. I love you. You're the precious. And even now, like I think I've been wearing this for like 2 days straight now, especially as I've been, you know, going through the house, getting rid of stuff, lifting boxes and stuff like that. This is the watch where it's like when I need to get something done, like no shit, whether I'm working out, if I'm going to get wet, just basic household things. This will always be my go-to.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really nice watch. And like you said, I got it for you just because I wanted to make sure that you had, you know, the right watch that could tackle any situation thrown your way. And to even better, AFIS, which is the military exchange. I think I bought it for you during like their Black Friday sale that year. And that watch was on special for like $99. Normally retails over $300. So
crazy.
When it came on, I was one of the first people to buy it. And then, after I bought it, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get myself one too. I literally went back in to try to buy it. It was sold out. So he got lucky that he got his watch when he got it.
Yeah. But before you go over to your fourth, and I think some people will find this interesting. The first time you deployed into a combat zone was in 2006 to Iraq during the surge. And in 2011 through 2012, you went to Afghanistan. What watches did you wear during both of those deployments? And what watches did you acquire while you were there?
So, So Iraq, I had a Suunto. I had the baseline Suunto that came out that year. And that was great. I really liked that watch. And then Afghanistan, I'm not really sure. I think it was just a G-Shock. Because that Suunto that I had in Iraq, I actually broke it when I was trying to change
the
battery.
How did you break it?
Well, it has these three plastic things, you know, because and the Suunto, you can actually unscrew it from the back with like a coin. I mean, you don't need any special tools, but it's a plastic cover. And inside there are these three prongy things that actually hold it in place. And when I put it back in, I put it in wrong and I broke the three prongy things. So because I could never secure it again. But no, I think I just had like a regular Casio. I don't remember because I don't have it anymore. But while I was there, so what was really cool about the place that I was at in Afghanistan is that we had some Afghan stores that would sell jewelry and Afghan rugs and things like that.
Ooh,
and
there was this DVDs.
One. Yeah, used DVDs. But there was this one vendor that sold imitation, Rolexes, Omegas, Tags, all this. So while I was there, I remember I got you and your brother a couple watches, and I got myself one too. And actually, what's funny is that the number fourth watch is actually the Omega Seamaster, okay, which I actually bought for you. I gave it to you initially when I came back.
Okay. We traded equally.
Yeah,
you had been wearing was the one I really wanted because that was the Daniel Craig watch.
Yeah.
And you're more of a Pierce Brosnan guy. That and you like the look of the Planet Ocean more.
Yeah. So I kept the Planet Ocean for myself. I also bought myself a Breitling that I gave you too, but then you gave it back to me. And
because the links broke and then I chipped the crown because it's not real stainless steel.
Yeah, but it's a great watch.
It looks good. It looks good.
And now through AliExpress, I was able to get fake Breitling silicone strap, and it goes extremely well with that watch. But anyway, the Seamaster, after you and I traded watches, this is my go-to watch. I mean, I really love this watch. I haven't had anybody make mention of it because I don't tell anybody that it's fake, even though I have had a couple people that I knew they had fake Omegas too. And I'm like, hey, let me show you why I know that yours is fake. Look at mine. Even though this is a true story. I was wearing this watch at one of my last jobs at the Pentagon. And one of the Navy guys that worked for me had a real one. So when he saw that I was wearing this, he's like, oh, I'm a watch guy too. I'm going to try to get cozy with the new boss. So he came over and showed it to me. He's like, oh, look, sir, you know, I have the same watch that you have. And I'm like, oh, really? So he came to my office and he gave me his, and I took mine off and I gave him mine. For 3 minutes, we were talking about how great this watch was. He never caught on that mine was a fake. And then when, you know, and I'm looking at his and I'm like, oh my gosh, mine is a damn good fake. I mean, there are a couple things that people that don't know the watch will be able to catch right off the get-go, but they're very, very slight differences. So when I gave him back his watch and he gave me back mine, I'm like, you know, mine's a fake. And he's like, what? So I actually walked them through and showed him, yeah, this is in the wrong place. But, you know, I just kind of went through like the four or five things that make it fake. And he was surprised because he truly believed it was a real thing. And then this was the kicker. I said, yeah, it only cost me $90.
That's like how much is the actual Omega?
It's like $6,000. So when I said that, he was like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, I could have saved all that money, but no, it's been a great, great watch. I wear it at work. I mean, I don't like the band. So like the, what you know, with these fakes,
the metal one it came with.
Yeah. The metal bands aren't great. It was good quality, but it just did not fit right. So as you know, I also went to AliExpress and got a really good, silicone strap that's on it now. It's black and it's awesome. I mean, I also don't wear it all the time, but I do wear it. And there's also been like my go-to watch. If I'm going to go do something, I mean, this is definitely a tactical looking, like an upper scale tactical looking type watch. I even wear it, you know, just to go out and do things. So I love it.
So while we're kind of on the topic, you know, we've talked about homages, like how the Invicta Pro Diver is really just a Rolex, just a Rolex diver. And now we've kind of gotten into the realm of, you know, of fake watches. What's your stance on that? Because my thing has always been, I know this is contentious on the watch community. So for some, big watch snobs, this is probably a big thing. And, you know, there are certain legal things about it, depending on where you are in the world. But my biggest thing has just been like, if it's there, if you're fine, get the watch. And I mean, what I really hate are watch snobs on YouTube that treat homage watches like Invicta or others like fake watches. And it's like, it doesn't, for me, it's never really mattered. If you like the watch and you want the watch and you want to spend the money on the watch, you know what you're getting? Get the watch, because I love my Invicta and I love my Omega. And I know that it's, you know, I know what it is and I know what my Invicta is, but I like the watch. What's been your stance on it?
You know, my position has always been similar to yours, which is, you know, if it's there and you want it, get it. I mean, you're spending your own money to get something. And if it makes you feel good, why not? Now, there are people that can say, oh, but you're contributing to this, you're contributing to that. I'm like, no, I'm not really contributing to anything. You know, I'm just buying a watch. And if it wasn't me, it was going to be somebody else. And, I mean, what I will say is this: I'm not for people that that like buy these and then want to sell them as the real thing and try to get that same type of money. I mean, there have been many times that I've seen like these really cheap, whether it's a Tag, a Rolex, or whatever, on eBay, Amazon, you know, previously owned, and it's like there's no way somebody's going to sell a $10,000 watch for $500. And I remember one time I actually found an Omega Seamaster that was for sale like for $300. And when I looked at it, because I know what the real one is and what the fake one is, I'm like, that's fake. The guy's trying to sell a fake as a real one. And he's trying to get a lot of money for it.
I've told people about my $20 Tudor Black Bay experience.
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, like wish.com, I sometimes I'll go on wish.com just to see the stuff they sell. And unlike other places, wish.com, what's crazy about it, it's also another Chinese site. They tell you everything is real, even though you know that it is absolutely fake. So I one of my grail watches has always been the Tudor Black Bay 58. It's a $5,000 watch retail. You can get them for around 37 to $4,000 used. But they were selling one for $20, and they tell you, "Oh, it's not going to come in the box because we don't want to do all the international shipping stuff, and you know all this other stuff, and you know we've just got so many, we just need to clear our inventory." Even though you have to be on the wait list to get that, typically, much like Rolex, the watch comes a few months ago, and one, they said it was a ceramic bezel sapphire crystal. It's all plastic. They tell you that it's stainless steel. It has a stainless steel bracelet. I put the bracelet on, the whole thing fell apart. It was like, it wasn't even like plastic. It was like a whole bunch of pieces of cardstock put together. And then they said it was automatic, and it wasn't. And within about a week, whatever battery was in there just died. So I think I'm the only person in the world to throw away a Tudor Black Bay 58. But, you know, it was only $20. I laughed at it. For me, it was an experience. And it's like, you know what? I would, one, even if it had not fallen apart, I would never wear it outside, because anyone looking at it, it would just know. It's like, yeah, that from a distance it looks real, but you get up to it and it's like, what is the point of that? What are you really trying to prove?
I mean, when I was stationed in Korea, they also sell a lot of counterfeit products, you know, replicas and things like that. Yeah. And honestly, you would go to a store and they would show you all these different watches. And, you know, first of all, a Rolex Submariner, that's quartz. That does not exist. So right there, you know, if you buy that, you're tipping your hat. You know, anybody that knows anything will know that's a fake. Not only that, just the quality, the material, the writing inside the bezel and things like that. Some were good, so you really had to like shop around to get the better one, but some were just crap. But bottom line, the Seamaster is like the best replica I have ever seen in my life. It's awesome. It's waterproof. I mean, it's a great watch. And
you would never dive with that one, would you?
Well, I mean, I don't dive, period. But
you would never go in a pool with it.
No, I have.
When I was
in Africa, I actually, in one of the places I was at, there was a pool and I went in and I had it on and it was fine. But, I mean, there's also part of responsibility. I'm a father and a husband. There's no way I'm ever going to spend that much money on myself on a watch. So if I can get something that kind of makes me feel a little better, it's only for me. And honestly, I'm the first one to tell you, if you ask me where'd you get it, I'm like, I got it in Afghanistan. It's a fake. You know, so
I started to realize that my Grail watch is going to have to be a more long-term thing the first time I paid taxes. So I think I understand the mindset now, Dad. But, yeah. Moving on to number five. And I mean, this is, I call this probably my most eclectic watch, but it's the one that probably has the most insane story. This is it's an Octagon Seiko 5 automatic. The Seiko 5 series was their first sports series introduced to the U.S. It's crazy. And I think they only made like a couple thousand of these. Juliana, my girlfriend, for our third anniversary dating, she bought this watch for $20 on, I think it was Poshmark. And when we saw it, it looked amazing. Because of Photoshop, I get the watch 3 weeks after it was supposed to arrive, and she gives it to me to, you know, unwrap. I didn't want her to put it, put a bow on it or anything. I like the experience of getting to open it up. And this watch, Dad, was absolute shit. The band was corroded and coming apart. The brushing on the side, there were scratches everywhere. The internal components couldn't work. The glass was cracked. It was absolutely ruined. So we couldn't return it because the guy shut down the store. Eventually he came back and her and a couple other people that I knew, we all gave him 1-star reviews. But what's crazy about this is I took this to the jeweler, and, the jeweler I go to in Centerville, I mean, they've done almost all the alterations and repairs and stuff for my watches. They had never seen a Seiko like this before. So everything from the glass to the automatic movement on the inside, because it wasn't a standard Seiko movement, it was out of production. Everything had to be replaced, and it was a lot of money I did not have to spend. But when it came back, it's just so different. And I had a temporary strap on there just because I wanted to, start wearing it a little bit. Eventually I would go to get it repaired at a place in Annapolis. And when the guy saw it, especially after we put the new band on, he offered me $5,000 for the watch in cash. And I was like, that is absolutely insane. This watch, even with the repairs, was only a couple hundred dollars. A few months later, I found out that this watch is $15,000. If it was original. If you buy even just the watch itself with nothing else on there, it is still between $5,000 to $7,000.
So what did you have to replace?
I had to replace the glass. So the glass is not even Hardlex. It's like a plastic type. So it's not waterproof at all. There's a Seiko, it's not the NH35 that you find in most watches. The Seiko automatic movement in there was actually taken out of another vintage Seiko. So it wasn't even a new movement. They took it out of an old watch and put it in there because it would fit. And they had to do the brushing on the side, which this is weird because I had never seen an Octagon like watch like this before. So when you have to do the brushing, it's not like most cases that you're finding for most regular divers or anything. They actually had to do it. They couldn't do it on the side of the crown because of the placing. But, I mean, everything basically but the hands and – actually, no, they had to brush the dial because there was like this green – this like greenish-brown grease on the dial. They reapplied the orange indices on there, but they took out the loom that was on there. So the swatch is supposed to have loom. They just repainted it orange to show what it would be. But yeah, I mean this watch is crazy, and I will, you know, the thought came to my head, I can get a lot of money for this. But honestly, it came from somebody I care very much about. It's got such a crazy story, and I mean this watch, it's unique. I will never get rid of it. And when people look at it, they're like, well, that's kind of weird. Once I tell them the story, they're suddenly like, you know, that is actually pretty cool.
So the guy was willing to give you $5,000, knowing all the changes.
Yep.
Wow. You should have taken the $5,000. Then you could have told your girlfriend, you know what? I love this watch and I love that you gave it to me. And now because of this, you get to upgrade me and you don't even know you were going to do that.
No. Then
you could have had two of your grill watches.
You know, I could have at least gotten a Tudor and a half, a Tudor and a Casio.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is crazy. I mean, even like people won't be able to see this. I might post a photo on it. Like even the blue glass around there, it's like a bluish tinted mirror. Like it's crazy. I will never find a watch that is stranger than this one, but
it's unique. It's unique and it's nice.
Yeah. All right. What's your last?
So the last one is actually the watch that you gave me on my birthday about a year or two ago. It's the EMG Horizon chronometer. Awesome watch.
Beautiful watch.
It's definitely an homage to the Tag Monte Carlo. And honestly, when you gave it to me, I was shocked. It's also not automatic, but it doesn't
it's
have
mecha quartz.
Yeah, it's mecha quartz, and it doesn't have a seconds hand. So, you know, the minute hand just kind of moves when it moves. But I like how you you bought it for me at a watch convention in DC, remember?
In DC. And this was, believe it or not, this was the cheapest of the watch vendors there. And it was not a cheap watch. I used my first bonus from the Washington Times to get it for you. But the reason why was, Dad, I love a lot of the watches you have. But as I've openly criticized, a lot of your watches look the same. I mean, you're a diver fan and everyone has their own preference, but I criticize your watches as all looking the same. So I wanted to get you a watch that was different and was also something of a rarity, because as we found out recently, they don't make that watch anymore.
Yeah. We literally just found out before we came on when we were looking at it online, when I was trying to get the specs. Yeah. EMG doesn't make this watch anymore.
Which is so freaking crazy.
Yeah,
because that was always one of their best sellers.
Yeah, and you know, like you and I were talking, maybe it's not on the site because they don't have inventory yet, or maybe they just stopped doing it. So what's kind of cool is that both my micro brands are unique watches now. They don't make them anymore. But no, this watch is great. It's another watch that you can I could wear it at work if I wanted to, but I don't, because it's nice. And it's definitely one to either wear casually to, if you're going to go out shopping or whatever, to definitely dressing up. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, unique watch. And I really, really like it. And again, I like it so much, I don't wear it that often, which is terrible.
I understand, but, though. It does not offend me.
Yeah, but I definitely need to wear it more often. Actually, I may even take it with me tomorrow when I go on my trip.
Would you have ever bought a square watch like that for yourself?
No, because honestly, it's not. I mean, yeah, if you look at my watches, a lot of them look like divers and a lot of them look like different variations of the Submariner. But this one's unique. This one's unique. This one's nice. It's different. And I think I'm at the point of my watch collection that I'm definitely into different. And but I think I'm also at that point that I think I have everything I need. And if I get something else, I might as well just save up for it and get that next grail item. Because unlike you, I don't have a Tag or an expensive watch at that level. I have all these little watches that are like under $500. So that's why I think it's time for me to, if I'm going to go that point, just kind of save some money and maybe try to get what I want to get later.
Cool. So Dad, we've gone through 10 watches that, you know, are from the expensive to the fake, to the homage, to everything else. My question to kind of wrap things up, and this is often a question that I get when I want to geek out about my watch collecting hobby and people are like, why do it? I think there's a thing about men, especially men my age, they don't wear watches. And if they do typically wear watches, it's for rare events like weddings, graduations, maybe an interview, or they're wearing Apple watches. I know a lot of watch people look down on the Apple Watch. I'm just not a fan because I don't like wearing my cell phone on my wrist, but you know, to each his own. I think that men should wear watches. And my reason is because it shows a little bit of responsibility. It keeps people more timely. And I think that's something that is missing in today's society. We take time for granted. And, you know, just from a more personal view, watches are one of the only things that men can really accessorize with. I mean, really, like you and I are pretty conservative in our style. Our watches are really probably the one moment where we could say, oh, this is some bling, look at me, or something like that. So that's also one of those aesthetics where it's like, you know, women get so many different things. This is one of the only things that men can really mess around with, and it still seems as socially acceptable. Why do you think there's this dwindling, you know, mindset of whether a watch is important in today's culture? And do you think it's important for men especially to wear watches?
Yes, men need to wear watches because men need to be on time, and not just men, but anybody who wears a watch needs to, you need to keep track of time because, you know, tasks, requirements, and things that you're working on are all time-based, whatever anybody wants to say. You know, this new mentality that I'll get to it when I get to it, or it'll just organically happen, it doesn't happen. If you have requirements, if you have timelines, you need a watch. Don't get me wrong. You can definitely use your Apple Watch. You can definitely use your iPhone.
I hate that excuse because what if your iPhone dies? What if you're in the middle of nowhere and your car dies?
Yeah. To each their own. I just think it's kind of irresponsible. And not only that, here's a reality that I don't like. I don't think you go to any meetings anymore or anything without people already taking out their phones and putting it on the table and always looking at them. So it's like, again, the phone has taken over so many things that we would normally have something else, but it's distracting. Having a watch shows people that you're serious. It's a tool to help you keep track of what you have to do. You don't want to be that guy or girl that's always looking at their wrist for time. That becomes distracting. But not only that, especially if you're a professional, you know, if you're a professional and you go to a meeting, an interview, or to a power meeting about something, people are going to judge whatever you want to say or not. People are going to judge what kind of watch you have when you get there. And if you show up with a nice watch, with a professional watch, just like if you show up wearing the right clothing, the right suit, the right shoes and things like that, it'll tell them that you're serious and that you definitely are somebody who, you know, I don't want to be corny and say that has some style, but that you know how to take care of yourself and you know how to appropriately, you know, accessorize and do that.
This is the one thing that I usually use in the argument, and I'll finish with this. And in your current job, in the last couple of roles that you've had where you're working with more civilians, you've had to be in the hiring process for people. Back in the before times, when I was in a couple of positions where I had to, you know, interview people face to face. Tell me if this happened to you, but I've had people who went to an interview who wore watches and who didn't wear watches, and maybe I'm thinking too much into it. I have never hired a person face-to-face or interviewed, or, you know, I've never wanted to hire someone during an interview that did not wear a watch. That was something that I noticed later, but instinctively I always did look to see, you know, are they wearing a watch or not?
I don't think I've ever had that.
I'm just paranoid.
And honestly, I think everybody that I've ever interviewed has always had some kind of a watch. And honestly, I didn't really care, you know, for the jobs that I was hiring for what kind of watch they had. But I will tell you, I mean, there is something to be said about presence. And as you know, I've I had a job a few years ago where, you know, instead of being in a uniform, I was in a coat and tie, and I did a lot of things at the State Department and things like that. And believe it or not, how you dressed, how you paired your dress with your watch and things like that showed something. And you walked in somewhere and you saw, I mean, you could automatically see that the people were wearing nice watches, whatever they were, everything from a nice Bulova to a Rolex to a Tag or whatever. You knew you were about to have a serious conversation. You knew you were talking to people that really knew what they were doing. I'm not saying that the watch correlates to smart, good, or whatever, because I met a lot of idiots that have really nice watches too. But in those groups and in those engagements that I had, that was like a little tip for me. It's like, okay, this guy's serious. And they were. And, you know, we did what we had to do. We had our serious business, and then we went. You know, I never said, hey, man, I like your watch or anything like that. I mean, that never happened. But
I would think in that situation, it's a little weird.
Yeah. So, but yeah. And honestly, it's also how you wear it. I mean, I know we could have a whole other show of when is the right time to wear a watch, because there have been many times you're like, Dad, that's a good watch, but you shouldn't wear it with t-shirts and shorts, you know? And things like that. I mean,
I'm a snob. I think if you wear a watch with a helium release valve, you should not be wearing it with a coat and tie. Mm-hmm. I think if you're gonna wear a suit, you shouldn't even wear a digital watch, even an Apple Watch. Just like I'm extra anal about that.
Yeah. But no, I've never used whether you had a watch on as a bias for employment.
I don't care what watch it is. You could wear something with Mickey Mouse on it. I just want to know that you pay attention to that. But anyway, Dad, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com, like The Chris Spangle Show, Liberty Explained, The Brian Nichols Show, The Boss Hog of Liberty, Freedom Strips with Keaton Tucker, On the Run with Rimzo Martinez, Gingerarchy with Tricia Stewart Mann, Upward Libertarian Activism, and Now Hear This. Tune in now, and we're going to help you sound smarter when talking with your friends.